Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home remodeling today and how to make your home more energy efficient, and a couple of great guests for you as well. Chad Spate back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison. Chad, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
And with Chad is Christy Weber. She's also back, Director of Design at TDS Custom Construction. TDS Custom Construction. Christy, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be here.
So as you listen to these two experts, I hope you'll join in with your questions. You have a remodeling plans? What questions you have about the process? You can give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address, ideas@wpr.org. Chad, let's start with you. Which home remodeling projects are popular at this time of year?
Well, that's a great question, Larry. You know, in the wintertime, I think in Wisconsin, we do our best to figure out what projects are inside the home so that we can avoid inclement weather and trying to, you know, feel our fingers and things like that while working. So a lot of, you know, kitchen and bathroom remodeling, a lot of lower level renovations. But we also still occasionally do work outside this time of year, and we just have to be a little bit more mindful of the weather forecast and obviously take some additional precautions to isolate the work area and also to protect the home from freezing.
Yeah.
keeping the occupants safe and cozy and all that good stuff.
Christy, I'm sure that's probably similar to what TDS Construction has to look forward to. You're nodding yes in agreement there.
Yeah, definitely. We like it. Whenever possible, we like to keep people inside in a basement remodel, kitchen remodel. But that's not always possible because, you know, the projects keep flowing through and we have things to do to take care of. So, yeah. You know, our folks that are out there in the field, they just get smart about how they dress and keep warm. So we do have a couple outside projects going on right now, an addition and kind of a cool deck rebuild on a mid-century house. And it's interesting for me, you know, I'm always kind of 6 months ahead of what's actually happening in the field. So I'm already looking at things like new houses and additional other additions that we're going to be doing later this year.
Yeah. So as we look at the remodeling process, Christy, what's that first step?
Well, the first step would be to, you know, give us a call or give Chad's a call. And every company varies a little bit. But we have kind of a slick intake process that we go through for new potential clients. And then the owner of TDS, Ben Blodgett, will come out and visit your house and get to know you a little bit better, find out more about what you're looking to do, talk, you know, all the technical things and the budget and timing. And, you know, we usually write a proposal, and if the client's feeling good about it, we'll go ahead and then we just start in on design. And then we usually start with what we call a design kickoff meeting. And that's going over, again, all the things that have been discussed in the past, making sure the client, if they have any more ideas or changes have occurred or things like that. And we ask tons of questions in our design process to really kind of get to the heart of what a client is looking to do, because sometimes they don't always know. They know what they need, but how do they get there? So we need to help guide them.
I'm thinking about my own process in this, and typically I will have a budget in mind beforehand. And, you know, I'll say, well, I could spend, I don't know, just throw a number out here. I could spend $30,000 on this. And so, you know, hoping for a range of 25 to 30. Is that kind of what you get from clients?
Yeah, we definitely talk about that. You know, sometimes if it's like a kitchen remodel or a bathroom remodel, we know a lot more about how much something like that might cost. Yeah. But sometimes we have to talk in ranges and be a little bit more fluid, because a client might have many ideas that they want to explore, and it's not till they understand the costs related to that can they make decisions. So it sort of depends.
Jad, you're nodding in agreement there.
Oh, absolutely. And our process is very similar, and budget is an important part of the conversation from the beginning. But as Christy said, you know, until we're clear about what the client really wants to do, it's impossible to predict confidently what that might cost. And so our challenge as remodeling professionals is always to do our best to keep the client focused on the things that they are able to do or willing to do. Because, you know, if we create a $100,000 solution and they have a $50,000 budget, that's not going to go anywhere. but as Christy said, you know, our companies, and there are many companies like us that have a design process, a development process, that the client hires us to help them figure out exactly what the scope of the project will be. And so, you know, that's a big cost driver. Are you remodeling a kitchen within the footprint of the current kitchen? Or are you tearing out the wall between the current kitchen and dining room and expanding the kitchen 3 feet into that space? Yeah. Maybe you're bumping out the side of the house.
Yeah.
I mean, those three projects right there are entirely different in scope and cost.
Yeah.
But even a kitchen within a given footprint can have a cost differential of 3 times, depending on how much has to be torn out and completely redone. Many older homes, the entire electrical system has to be redone in the kitchen. And that constitutes a third to a half of the circuits in their breaker box. Yeah. Sometimes they have to upgrade the entire service to their home because they have a 100-year-old home and they might have a 60-amp, you know, main line coming into the home. So there are so many variables. Yeah.
Ann in Sun Prairie has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and your guest. Picking up on the theme of perhaps bumping out the side of your house, I have a 2-unit building, and it was built as such. It's approximately 60 years old, and the two apartments in it are both reaching the stage where they need new kitchens and new bathrooms. And in my preliminary thinking about it, I'm wondering if I would be better served perhaps by bumping out the side of the house and getting the new kitchens and bathrooms, which are all on that side of the house, more room and rather than staying within the existing perimeters of the house. The other driving issue, when I first start to think about this, there's a single furnace for both units, and through the years, people have suggested, you know, your second floor apartment would be more valuable if the person who was in it had any control over the heat. Right now, everything is configured that the person on the first floor controls the heat and the air conditioning. So since there's a new furnace involved, there's the potential of needing a lot of work in regard to the bathrooms in both units and the kitchens. Would you direct me to start thinking about the bumping out of the property to make it a little like brand new in all these regards, especially with regard to mechanicals and the redoing of the ductwork, I suspect, for the furnace? And I'll just let you see what you think so far, and then if you have questions for me, I'll stay on.
All right. Thanks a lot. And you raise some great questions, I think. Maybe, well, both of you enjoy it. But, Christy, why don't you start, and then Chad can chime in.
Yeah. So, Ann, I would say, you know, the first thing to look at would be, you know, can you bump out without knowing your property or having seen it and where the lot lines are? You know, I can't really say for sure if you could bump out or not, but, you know, looking at the zoning requirements for whatever municipality you're in, you know, we're in the city of Madison here, and they have a pretty thoroughly written zoning code. So that's one of the very first things that we look at when we're talking about an addition on a house, is making sure that it's possible and legal, you know, in the city that we're in. And then the other thing that I might do in a situation like yours as a designer is explore some basic concepts that look at both options, you know, and then when we get something that's sort of a basic layout and an understanding of, you know, the major parts and pieces to those two options, we would try to put, you know, our best foot forward in terms of determining a price on both of those options. And I think that would help you a lot in determining, you know, which way you would want to go forward.
Yeah. Chad, anything to add there?
Not really. I mean, those are the big issues. Certainly the scope of the job. I mean, no doubt bumping out the house will end up costing more. But if it's possible, but it might be worth it.
Yeah. So.
And then in response to the furnace, I would have someone over, like an HVAC contractor, to take a look at it and discuss your options. And again, the costs related to those options. You know, way back when I was living in apartments before I owned my first house, I had lived in a couple apartments where I didn't have control of my own heat and cooling. It could be frustrating, comfort issues. And, you know, if you're the type of person who wants to use less energy to heat your home and maybe keep your thermostat low, but then your neighbor needs it higher for one reason or another, that can prove to be a challenge.
Yep, and I would also add that along those lines that there will be an opportunity by putting a second furnace for the upstairs unit. I would also explore the possibility of insulating and thus thermally and acoustically isolating the two floors better from each other, so that even if the lower floor really cranks up the heat, the second floor has some better control rather than just opening their windows.
That would probably also make a sound difference too, for the people who are on the bottom floor not hearing so much from the top floor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So lots to consider, Ann. Does that help?
It certainly does. I thank you kindly.
All right. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Christy Weber, a director of design at TDS Custom Construction in Madison, our guest. And I hope you'll join in. Questions or comments about remodeling your home, give a call at 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Courtney Everett, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking home remodeling today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Christy Weber, Director of Design at TDS Custom Construction in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Give a call with your questions at 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Chad, how do people really find a remodeler, a good remodeler?
Well, there are a number of excellent resources out there. Certainly, I'm a big advocate for the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, which has a very strong presence in the state of Wisconsin. The largest chapter in the country is in Milwaukee, and the largest chapter based on the population that it serves is in Madison. And then there's also a strong chapter a chapter up in the Fox Valley. So so that's a great resource. You can go to you know, NARI.org to look at members of that association. And I think what sets that association apart from many other trade associations is that it has a very strong and an upheld code of ethics that it holds its members to. So that allows a consumer to file a complaint. And it's a pretty thorough process that we go through. And we do hold our members accountable. There's also some great resources through the Better Business Bureau. There are a number of other websites out there that help to allow consumers to give verified reviews of contractors. Our company uses a firm called Guild Quality, which is a fairly widespread consumer feedback tool that contractors use.
Well, there's Christy, lots there. Christy, anything else?
Yeah, I would just add, you know, ask your friends and ask your family members and your neighbors. They'll tell you stories about how things went with the contractor they used, and you'll get quite a bit of information from them. And I would also say, once you start calling contractors, you know, interview at least a couple. You know, you want to find someone who's a good fit. Just because someone's a great contractor, sign, build, firm, whatever, doesn't mean they're the right fit for you. So you want to be very comfortable with the team that you're going to be working with, and the team that's going to be in your house.
Yeah. Mike and Madison, we'll go to you. Mike, thanks for calling.
Hi, I was just calling today. My wife and I recently were hoping to remodel two pretty average to small sized bathrooms that we have. And we had a budget in mind, honestly thinking about $10,000 to $15,000 for each bathroom. And really have just gone about a process of seeking out contractors, had the one estimate recently, and when the numbers came back, it was about twice what we were expecting for each of those bathrooms. So $30,000 for each one, you know, if we were going to do both together, $60,000. That seemed like a lot of money to us, and I was just wondering if you could speak to if there is, you know, kind of a general ballpark for what to expect in terms of cost for a remodel like that, or also, you know, if building costs right now are especially high with everything that's going on.
Yeah, no, those are great questions, Mike. And so I would say first that, $30,000 for a bathroom remodel is certainly not an unusual or an unreasonable amount of money. But as is always the case with remodeling, the real issue is what exactly is required and, you know, what exactly is being done. So, for example, I can tell you that our typical bathroom remodel probably costs closer to $50,000. And I mean, there are some that are $30,000 and there are some that are $80,000. Wow. And the difference between a $30,000 remodel and an $80,000 remodel involves about 20 variables that, altogether will push that particular remodel to the given final cost. So the age of the house is a huge factor. A bathroom remodel has certain code requirements, one of which is to have a 20 amp GFCI outlet dedicated circuit to that bathroom when it is gutted and remodeled. And that often does not exist in a bathroom that has been built in the last later than 25 years. Many homes end up having to have that retrofit done. And that's not unto itself a huge expense, but little things like that all add up to create quite a bit of cost. And so I would add that, for example, hazardous materials, which we are likely to encounter in any home that is built since 1978, that too is going to drive the cost of a renovation. And of course, all the things you select, and it is true that the cost of labor and the cost of materials are higher today than they were any time in my memory. And I don't think that a lot of those costs are likely to go down anytime soon. Certainly there are some things like lumber that fluctuate rather drastically, but there's not a lot of lumber typically in a bathroom remodel. So,
So $30,000 doesn't seem at all kind of out of line, from the sound of it to me anyway.
No, but I mean, it is good to talk to a couple of people. And in our case, I mean, you ultimately are going to have to pick someone to do the careful planning with. And I do think that's a step worth taking, but not all contractors work that way. If you don't finalize the plan and the exact scope and all the details and the final cost with someone, I mean, with our company, you've got to pay to do that finalization. Some companies will do it for free. But I mean, it's all a matter of what you're really going to get. I always say that you do get what you pay for. And so if something is free, it's probably not worth as much. But that's not necessarily true. Some companies actually will spend 20 to 40 hours putting together a very careful proposal and not charge you for it. But you also have to realize that there's only so many of those that that company can give out before they realize that they don't have time to, you know,
to do it,
do the work. So
For free. So there you go, Mike. Lots of good things to consider. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joyce in Medford will give you an opportunity. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi, Larry. Just a couple of comments. The first on a prior call about the rental property.
Yeah.
I would suggest that she evaluate if her improvements are going to allow her to increase the amount of rent she receives, or how long it would take for that rent to pay off that improvement. And then the other thing, as a contractor, we all know the old saying of you can spend your time, you can get things done quickly, or you can get it done with good quality, or your money, time, money, and quality. And usually you only get two out of the three. I would add a fourth in this COVID supply chain HGTV world. Sometimes people want everything, even if their budget doesn't allow. And then when they add everything, they don't realize that the timeline is going to severely be affected because all that stuff that's extra, it takes longer.
Yeah. Some points there. Maybe Christy, a comment.
Well, I totally agree with you, Joyce, about looking at that apartment, the two flat, I think she said it was.
Yeah.
Because that you're definitely going to see some increased value in your house. You're not going to see the full increase at this time. There's actually a report out there called Cost Value. And that actually might be helpful for the gentleman who was just asking about the bathrooms. They do. They look at it nationally, and then they look at it by locality as well. And they say, okay, well, in this general area, a kitchen is X amount. And you can see increase in your value of your house, you know, maybe about this other X amount. And it depends on the thing. So we all know that kitchens and baths add value more than anything else. So I think that's a really good thing to look at. We do that a lot just to make sure that, you know, we're still kind of in line with everybody else in terms of our costs. And I think too, to the point about the fourth item, you know, time, money, quality, and this other, you know, nebulous thing that we talk about, which is, I would say it's really important if you know what you want, let's talk about it all at the beginning. There is some room for changing your mind or shifting things, you know, during concept design, but Joyce is absolutely right. If you're going to be kind of feeding information to your designer and your contractor in dribs and drabs, that's definitely going to extend the process out over way more time than you originally intended. So getting organized before you approach a design build firm or contractor, I think is really important, as organized as you can be. And then we can help you sort of fill in the gaps. But time is money in this, industry.
It is indeed. And let's say this, somebody wants to start a project and, all right, I want to remodel the bathroom. Now I'm going to go talk to somebody. I'm going to go talk to a contractor, and the time process on that. Well, you know, this is not going to get, you're not going to get, want to do it, but you're not going to get started next week. How long out do you have to figure this out?
Well, so I'd be happy to share that right now, if a client were to sign up in the month of February with our company to do the planning for a bathroom remodel, we will be able to start working with them on the planning in September. And we would expect the project to be able to be scheduled in 2023, but I cannot absolutely guarantee that, because we don't schedule a project until we have defined it and specified it and we know exactly what we're going to do. And part of the reason for that is that we may discover that faucet that they really want is going to take 8 months to obtain. And so even if we were capable of producing it 4 months after they signed the contract, we're not going to be able to produce it for 8 months. And one of the things that, unfortunately, consumers will learn the hard way is that if the contractor is a little bit overwhelmed and actually doesn't have a good planning process, no one is going to know that the project is going to end up getting delayed in the middle until it happens. And you don't want that. You want to probably have a contractor that has the experience and the capacity to do the planning, as Christy said, to really kind of figure out what the big important details are before you get started. And that will ultimately save you money and potential delays and heartache.
There you go. And Joyce, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Tom in Rhinelander has some questions. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks, Larry, for taking my call, and thanks, Chad and Christy, for being on. I have a question. We're replacing some windows, and we have front windows and back windows. First question is, replacing casement windows with a bay window, are there any structural issues that I need to think about? And then the second question is, we have windows that face a lake, and they're 5 feet tall, but they don't open. And so we need some windows that are going to open. And I don't want a line across the sight line as we're looking down to the lake. What are my options for how to have a clear sight line, but have windows that still open?
Yeah. Good questions.
Well, yeah, I'll take the second one. Sometimes it depends on your situation, obviously, but if you've got, an 8-foot wall is kind of an average height of a room. You might be able to consider fixed windows that are kind of at the point of your sight line, and those can be larger and give you more of a panoramic view. But then potentially below those, you could have another row of windows that have like an awning style. So you could still open those and have ventilation, coming in from the lake breezes, and it wouldn't, block your sight line out to the lake.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Chad, you have something?
Yep, and I would add the structural question about being able to put in the bay window I think, to replace some casements. Typically, a bank of casement windows were installed as one large unit. And the only way to know that is to pull off the mull casing between two of the units to see if there's some sort of structural, material there. It would often be a 2x6 or a 2x4 that might be between the windows. And if that's there, then it's likely that the header above those windows will have to be enlarged. But this all comes down to figuring out what is actually there structurally to see if, in fact, there was one large opening, and you're simply going to be removing the 3, 4, or 5 casement windows, say, that were in that opening. Or if they were actually installed as individual units, then the header would have to be enlarged. So
there you go. Thank you so much, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Jill from Greendale, as long as we're talking about windows, Jill sent an email from Greendale about replacing windows. They live in a community and houses designed by Eleanor Roosevelt in 1938. Jill has the inner original wood panels with the divided panes. They plan to stay in the home for 10 more years, probably. Where should she begin replacing windows in that home?
That's a tough one.
Wow.
There's just so many variables to consider, wouldn't you say, Chad? You know, there's the historic quality and there's the existing conditions, and it's kind of, are there limitations in terms of what she can do to this important house that maybe, I don't know, it could be on the landmarks list. There may be tax credits available.
Absolutely.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the first thing, would be to figure out, what historical designation does the house have, and what limitations are put on it. And then how much do you want to preserve of that? I mean, that's an amazing thing. I didn't realize Eleanor Roosevelt had ever designed a home. So I think there's I'd pay to see that. So maybe there might be a whole other direction you could head in there, but
yeah, right. New business model.
Right.
I would say looking it up and seeing if it's on some sort of landmarks list, or maybe the town or city that you live in, it's a historic district or something like that, because there are definitely, in the city of Madison, we have limitations on certain neighborhoods. We have about, I think it's 4 historic neighborhoods where if you want to make changes to your house, they care a lot about what those changes are going to be. And windows is one of the hot ticket items that we talk about a lot. There's some other ones as well. So I think that would be the first step. And I'm guessing because you know that, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt designed this house, which is incredible. I had no idea that she did that. I'm guessing that you want to do it in a historically sensitive way. So if there are people around that are concerned about the historic qualities of the house, they also might be able to guide you to the right, you know, a window manufacturer or other folks that have expertise in that area.
I was thinking about my own home that was not designed by Eleanor Roosevelt, but it's, 1906 4-square, and we wanted to, and we were replaced every window in the, I mean, it was a total remodel, but we were able to find windows that were designed to look and sort of fit that era of when but yet they are very energy efficient and so forth, but they were, you know, designed to look like the old windows.
It is possible to do, and as Christy said, there are just some very tight guidelines, and I know both of our companies do a lot of this sort of work where we're working on 100-year-old homes and they often have some level of historic value, and whether it's a matter of an entity requiring certain things be done or just the customer wanting to respect the architectural integrity of the home, Marvin and a few other manufacturers are very good, in my view, of creating products that can mimic the architectural details of a 100-year-old window and still deliver 21st century efficiency and performance and ease of operation. There are options, again, depending on what the municipality or the governing body might require.
That's a great email, Jill. Thank you so much. I didn't know Eleanor Roosevelt designed homes either. So it's kind of a really little cool side feature of that email. Vern from Eau Claire will give you a chance now. Vern, thanks for calling.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for letting me on. And one comment on Eleanor Roosevelt. She is the only first lady ever to let an American Native Indian sleep in the Lincoln bedroom. In 1934.
No.
So, and we got to bring the cost of housing down. See, the realtors control all these building codes you got that you really don't need a lot of them. So the only way we're going to manufacture housing for people is to make mobile homes in quantity in factories, prefabs. So I designed a frame. This one's about 26 feet wide and 32 feet long. This would be a cottage. It's actually, you can put wheels on it because I got 2x12 tubing under there. Because I used to design houses in high school. We design houses that are not efficient, like high schools, for instance. Instead of using 2 acres, you build four-story high schools.
Yeah, well, Vern, I appreciate your call. Is it comments, Chad, from you?
Yeah, I really appreciate those comments, and there are so many issues to talk about because Vern is absolutely correct that there is a future for prefab or modular construction of new homes and to a lesser extent the renovation of homes. It is true that sometimes we do some partial prefabrication of elements of an addition that we might build. It is definitely more cost effective to construct something in a factory than it is to construct something out piece by piece in a field or in a populated busy neighborhood where it's even more costly to make things happen when you're interacting with everyone who lives around it and within the construction site. So those are legitimate concerns. But I would push back a little bit on the notion that the building codes are somehow put in place to in a way that penalizes the homeowner, because I would actually argue the opposite. I'm often frustrated by some of the things that are fought that I think should be required in the building code. And a lot of times home builders will argue the same thing that Vern just said, that, well, you know, we can't afford to make houses more energy efficient, or we shouldn't be forced to, be so concerned about air quality and things like that. And obviously, it's always a difficult thing to decide what should be regulated and what should be left to the marketplace. But by and large, building codes are there to protect the consumer, to make sure that things are structurally sound and that they will last and that they're healthy and safe. Yeah. And the codes are not perfect. The codes are a product of the political process. If you have a functioning political process, then ultimately you do end up with a building code. And my observation in the industry 30 years is that often the building codes are about 10 years behind the science in our industry. TDS and Chad's, we run into each other at the Better Building, Better Business Conference many years. And, we're there talking about the latest, greatest thing in home technology and energy efficiency. And, you know, those folks that are presenting at those conferences are always arguing about, you know, what's best and what works and what doesn't work. And it's complicated. but it's an important conversation to have. So,
Vern, thank you very much for calling. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Christy Weber, director of design at TDS Custom Construction in Madison, our guest. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison and Christy Weber, Director of Design at TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Questions for them about home remodeling? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And I'm... there were some people saying, I don't think Eleanor Roosevelt designed a home, but I just checked online, and I know there's one Eleanor Roosevelt designed from the east side of, I don't know what town it is, but it's on the market now at $13,490,000. So
wow.
Wow.
So apparently
it's a 1,000 square foot bungalow.
I don't know. I didn't have a chance to look at the house. Oh my goodness. Well, so I guess she did. Aaron and Stoughton, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Absolutely. Less than 13 million. I bought a home recently that was built, I believe, in 84, and the situation I've got, it's three bedrooms, two and a half baths. The two bathrooms are, the two full baths are upstairs with the three bedrooms. Problem is, the instead of a master bath, it's more of a micro bath. Off of the master bedroom, it's a stand-up shower. You have to kind of walk sideways past the toilet to get into that shower. When you open the door to get into the bathroom itself, the door just barely misses the countertop. It's so small, I actually took the door off the hinges. And the bathroom, the other bathroom that's upstairs, is directly on the opposite side of the wall. So it's right, the bathrooms are back to back. And that one has a more than full-size tub. It's an old jetted tub, single vanity. But I'm considering taking that old jetted tub out, putting in a nice walk-in shower, having the entire bathroom redone, updated, and I'm wrestling with the ideas or the thoughts of, do I risk combining the two bathrooms, or maybe I think they call it a Jack and Jill type, where there's access from the master bedroom, something. The bathroom is just almost to the point of unusable other than the stool and the sink. Your thoughts on that, and maybe even the idea of a shower that can be accessed from either bathroom.
And then the additional part, I think, is what does that do to the resale value of the house should the person want? I mean, you go from... You lose one bathroom is what you're doing here from the sound of it.
End up with something that's much more usable.
Yeah, you one less bathroom, but the one you got is a whole lot better. Okay. Boo. Okay. Chad,
yeah, well, it's a problem that we've certainly seen in a number of homes, and but it's also an opportunity, as you pointed out, because if you were to reconfigure the two bathrooms to make them both more functional, that's one way to go. I mean, it's certainly possible to create that Jack and Jill single bathroom. I guess if I were doing that, I might have the goal of creating a separate little water closet for the toilet, so that when someone is on the toilet. They can, you know, be in privacy, and you're not having to lock the whole bathroom down for the entire upstairs of the home. So there are a variety of ways to potentially redesign the space. But of course, this is where looking at the particular home and the particular layout that you have now will, you know, help reveal a lot as to what can be done and what we might recommend. Another thing that stood out to me when you talked about that door swinging into the room, a simple fix on that would be simply to potentially allow that door to open the other direction so that it's swinging back into the bedroom. While that's often not necessarily as desirable, it's a, you know, it's a simple way to change something that probably has a better outcome. You know, I have a team that works with my clients, and Christy is actually that, you know, she is the team at TDS, or she is a part of the team, a critical design person. So she probably has some thoughts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people love their master bathrooms, or we call them primary bathrooms, for a primary suite. And I think it would definitely help the value of the house. And I think it would be like sell faster, sell for more sort of a situation if you ever sell your house. So I think that you're onto something there. I think it would be good to take a look at, you know, what it would take to remodel that and continue. I think you should continue to have two separate bathrooms if at all possible. But I think mostly what people are looking for is that bigger primary bathroom, you know, maybe a couple bells and whistles. And then, you know, the kids, presumably, who are in the other, and we're just talking families here, but those kids are in the other bathroom or bedrooms. They don't need anything fancy. They can just have something a little bit simpler. It sounds like you just want to almost reverse the two. It's too bad you can't just flip them and be done with it. I would recommend, you know, if you want to play a little bit, take some measurements and draw it out on some graph paper and just, you know, see what you might be able to come up with. And, you know, make sure that you have clearances for all the things, which you're very familiar with clearances now because you feel so cramped in there. And I think that could lead you to potentially some other ideas, might get you excited. And then perhaps you could speak with someone who could do the work, and a designer like myself or the team at JADS. Can help you sort of vet your ideas and take it to the next level.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Aaron, thanks for calling. Interesting dilemma you've got there. Gene in Wisconsin, Jeannie, I should say, in Wisconsin Rapids. What's on your mind?
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I have a maybe more of a structural question. I'll try to make it really quick. My house was built in 1987. There is a great room, and apparently the dining bump out was an addition to the original blueprints, that it has a crawl space instead of the basement. And in the meantime, it has unfortunately settled. It wasn't built correctly, and it has settled, and it caused all these kind of pressure cracks that formed in our ceiling and drywall. So we thought we had it fixed, and we did a big remodel from our kitchen to our great room, and we opened up a whole doorway. Now that, in the meantime, now all the drywall we put in to surround that has cracked again. So it's continuing to be an issue. And I think what we need is either it's not a load-bearing wall. We've had people crawling up in the attic up there. It is so weird. No one can figure it out. So we wondered if a big structural beam going across that pass-through we created, or just if you know of a building engineers, like an association we could contact.
Sorry to hear about the problems you're having, but I will say that just anecdotally, it's not that unusual to have some settling over time with an addition, or with say a space that was added on to a home. Soil conditions vary. And while if some testing had been done, maybe things would have been done a little bit differently. There are some things that might be possible to do to change or improve the situation. It's also possible that things will not continue to move. I would recommend potentially hiring a structural engineer to find a firm that you know, specializes in these sorts of residential construction challenges in the Wisconsin Rapids area. I don't know someone to recommend, but again, I would recommend, you know, go through places like NARI, and again, reach out to friends and neighbors. And I think you'll be able to find someone that can assess the home. And then it might be as simple as, you know, doing some drywall repair. Because the house has settled and now you can just do it. And it's not unusual to come back a year after something is built and have to touch up some drywall anyway without there being structural defects.
There you go, Jeannie. Thank you for calling. Chad Spade and Christy Weber will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And you can join in. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Taking a look at home remodeling on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Our guest, Chad Spate, the owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison, and Christy Weber, Director of Design at TDS Custom Construction of Madison. Are you currently remodeling your home? What's the project? Are you doing it yourself, or you hire a professional? You can give a call at 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And let's see, let's take a call from Judith in Milwaukee next. Judith, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I think I can straighten out the Eleanor Roosevelt designed home. The Milwaukee suburban, at one time, now maybe more incorporated than not, Greendale was one of three so-called Greenbelt towns during the second term of Franklin Roosevelt. And Eleanor Roosevelt visited. And I found a Chicago Tribune article that was written describing the tour guide who now can give tours of the area, and he describes the story of Eleanor Roosevelt's 1938 visit. So she was actually there, and she was inspecting the homes, and it quotes the guide as saying that while touring one of the homes, she noticed that the coal bins were placed by the laundry rooms, and she said that these homes must have been designed by men, since no woman would have put a dusty coal bin near the clean laundry. And there's one more little bit here. And at the same time, a local newspaper praised the setup, saying that now women could do the family laundry and shovel coal at the same time.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Well, Judith, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Judith.
And Jill sent a note and said the architects were Harry Bentley and Walter Thomas, as listed on historical information that she found. You never know what you're going to find out here on the Ideas Network and on this program.
I love our listeners, Larry. They're always just, I mean, they know as much as we do. And so together, we're a great community.
Oh, man. And what about you? Maybe you've got, I think we've got the Eleanor Roosevelt issue established now. But what about you? Maybe you have a home renovation question of your own to deal with. And you can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Christy, the do-it-yourself videos are popular online for people wanting to do home improvement projects themselves. If you're looking at the, well, what's the best way to approach these videos? Let me put it that way.
Well, there's so much information out there, and some of it's really great and super helpful, and some of it makes it sound a lot easier than it actually is. So if you're going to, like, let's say you want to tile your bathroom floor and you go start looking at all the do-it-yourself videos online, I'd say watch several so that you can kind of compare the different advice. Seek out people who know what they're doing. There are a lot of really talented tile people out there that I've noticed are posting content online. So you could kind of research them just a little bit, you know, just to make sure they know what they're talking about. And then also try to be patient. It's not easy, any of these things, especially if you've never done it before. So be patient with yourself and others and know that maybe it's not going to be perfect, but there is a sense of pride that comes with doing something yourself that you've never done before. So that would be my approach.
There we go. A good approach. Carol in Crystal Lake, let's go to you. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry. This is just a run-of-the-mill question about windows and just casement windows. We got some estimates, and they're about $1,000 a window. And I'm not talking about a fancy casement, just, you know, I don't have the measurement, or a bank of windows or a bay, just, you know. But they wanted, we were looking at 12 because, you know, we don't know how long we're going to be staying there. We're into downsizing. What should we want to spend on, you know, a good window?
Yeah. So Carol, that's a great question. And there's so many potential variables. So are you just taking out existing windows and putting in a new unit?
Yes, entirely replacement.
Okay. And do these windows operate?
Oh, sure. We've been told they're pretty good. And I've looked at brand new homes with vinyl that I thought were worse than my 20-year-old windows. You know, they're just starting. Yep. I'm feeling drafts more this year. They're 35 years old, so.
Okay. Are the new windows that were proposed for $1,000, what are they made out of? Do you know?
Well, I don't want to say glass, but I think they have an E factor. I don't recall, but I know this company, several neighbors have used them. He lives down the street. So
okay.
I just thought that was, you know, for smaller windows, they're not, you know, for a bank in our living room, that would be $3,000. And, you know, it's probably 10 foot by 5 foot, you know, for those three windows.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't, so to, I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. I don't think $1,000 a window is unreasonable, but it, so many of the details will, you know, determine whether or not you're getting a fair price for that. You know, typically when we're replacing basement windows, we're often installing a fiberglass unit and sometimes glass block. Sometimes vinyl, but I'm not a big fan of a vinyl window just because the vinyl moves around a lot. But there's so many variables, and you know, the hardware that is part of an operating window is a big part of what you're paying for. On the one hand, for the material and how the windows are constructed, and then how competently and what they are installed and whether they're properly installed. These are all variables that go into the cost of installation. So I guess to answer your question, I would not be shocked or concerned by a proposal for a quality product properly installed by a company that's going to stand behind it. $1,000 a window is probably a fair price, but...
And the person lives who would be doing the work lives down the street from you, which isn't a bad idea. And I know both Chad and Chad's Design Build and the TDS Construction does a lot of work kind of in their own neighborhoods. And it's nice to be able to just get on the phone and say, you know, hey, Christy, or hey, Chad, you know, what's going on with this? And you get a pretty quick answer because there's somebody who lives right in your neighborhood. So there you go. Thank you so much. There's a couple of questions relating to cabinets that I wanted to bring up, and maybe we can take them as a pair. Jen had sent an email saying they recently bought a house where the owner had, previous owner had painted the cabinets, doors, and inadvertently painted baseboards while painting the walls. The paint's poor quality, it's chipping, and wondering if it's possible to strip paint off of cabinets and repaint. And can they be sanded or repainted, or should she just start with new cabinets? Diane emailed asking your opinion on refacing kitchen cabinets. Is it worth it? Is it cost effective? Does it last? So a couple of related questions there. Who wants to go with that? Christy, do you want to take the start with that?
I can try it. I usually defer to our painter and our interior designers who know all about the cabinets and things like this. But I would say it's like same answer that we give a lot. It depends. If they're good quality cabinets and they're solid, it might be worth thinking about doing some painting or stripping off and repainting. I would recommend, a spray applied paint of some kind so you get that nice professional looking finish that'll last longer. If your cabinet doors are made of particle board, I think I wouldn't probably try to save those. I'd probably think about, new cabinets, or maybe you can kind of split the difference. If the boxes of the cabinets are in pretty decent shape, you might be able to fix them up and just paint, the face frames, and maybe you get new doors to put on those cabinets. So a couple of different options there, depending on your situation. I don't know. Chad, do you have anything to add to that?
I think you hit all the points. It really depends. Yep.
But it would be, if you've got a decent quality old cabinet and you can repaint it or put new handles or whatever on it, you can, for a lot less money than putting in the new cabinets, you can.
Yeah, it's definitely true that when you reface cabinets, you are going to spend maybe a quarter to a half of what you would otherwise spend on tearing out and entirely replacing cabinets, and that's often with like upgrading the hardware and everything else.
So. Yeah, Mike in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I've got a rough-in in the basement for another bath, so all the plumbing is there, and I'm going to have to live with that. But the walls are poured concrete. What's the best practice as far as insulation and vapor barrier on the exterior walls on that?
How old is your home, Mike?
It's only about 15 years old.
Okay. And is it a dry basement?
Yes, it's a dry basement.
Does it have a drain tile and a sump pump?
Yep.
Okay. Great. So, I ask those questions just because I like to know kind of the state of things. Are you planning to do the work yourself, or are you going to probably hire it out?
Well, I'm right at that point right now where I'm kind of looking at the cost of material and then trying to figure out the cost of the pain of doing it myself. So, to get an idea when people come in and quote, I know what questions I need to ask, make sure I get a good job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there are certainly a variety of things that you can do. Because it's a newer home that is likely to be properly waterproofed on the outside and has a sump system in it that is there to deal with water as it's collecting on the perimeter of the foundation, provided all those systems are working well, could potentially install an insulation board directly onto the wall. Typically when we're we'll typically use a blue board or a Sometimes we'll have a two-part spray foam applied directly to the foundation wall. And if we are framing out the wall for finishing, we would typically frame the wall with a one-inch gap between the framing and that exterior foundation so that the spray-on foam can be continuous. But if we're putting up a foam board, then we would put that up first and then frame over top of it. If it's an older home, or if you really want to knock it out of the park, then we would recommend putting some sort of a dimple board on that foundation wall so that in the event there is a failure, a crack or something that, that happens down the road and water comes in, it will have a clear path to the floor. And then there's some other things that can be done to allow that water to find its way to a floor drain or just to come out onto a floor, depending on what your floor finish is going to be. These are things that we discuss with our clients to determine, you know, what other finishing is going to happen so that you don't end up regretting not having taken a step that will allow the home to remain dry and comfortable. Because really what you're trying to do is not is to make sure that water and moisture are not getting into that wall. And then if they do get into your wall, it has to be able to get out. And so you had asked the question about the vapor barrier. And in this case, when you are below grade, finishing up against that foundation or against that cement wall, you should not install a vapor barrier on the interior side of that wall. If there is a vapor barrier at all, which many of these foam products we're talking about actually are, that vapor barrier needs to be right up against the concrete. Because if the moisture gets into the wall, it's going to want to dry into the basement, and you want to allow that to happen because one of the biggest problems we see in finished basements is that people finish them just like every other room in the house, and they put up that plastic visqueen behind the drywall, and the wall gets damp, and it has nowhere to go. So it starts to mold and rot, and it starts to smell musty, and it just it's going to continue to fail and cause problems. So you can avoid that by just putting the drywall up on the studs. If you wanted to put fiberglass in between the studs, you could. We typically just stick with a with either the spray-on foam or the you know foam product.
There you go. Thank you, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter emailed saying they removed a bath-shower combo, replaced it with just a nicer shower. Do consumers still want bathtubs? You know, if you're thinking about reselling. Mm-hmm.
I always think about families that have little kids. You know, they typically they're the biggest user of the bathtub. Maybe close behind would be the sort of relaxation. So if somebody wants to be able to relax in their bathtub. So, you know, I do talk about this with clients quite a bit. You know, they're like, we don't really, our kids are grown or they don't have kids or whatever. And they don't feel that they don't really need a bathtub. So we do talk about the pros and cons. Like maybe there's a bathtub in another area of the house and that will suffice. So the bathroom remodel that you're working on now that, that you just want to convert your bathtub to a shower, that's fine because there's still a bathtub elsewhere in the home. So we really just kind of discuss the pros and cons of it. But I do think that if you think your home, when you go to sell it, is going to be, you know, a great option for a family, you know, a starter home, they usually have little kids. I would say maybe keeping a bathtub somewhere in the house would be appealing to them.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Courtney is planning to add a fence in her backyard this summer. Should she call a contractor or a company that specializes in fencing installation or both for quotes?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And Courtney, if Courtney has a relationship with a contractor that she, you know, really liked, I would recommend she reach out to that company and see if they build fences. But I know that we have gone both ways with fences, where we sometimes bring in a fence company that specializes in fencing for our clients, and sometimes they're looking for something very specialized and we might build it ourselves. So it doesn't hurt to call multiple people and, again, go through those various paths to find someone that others might recommend.
Steve from Eau Claire called and wanted to comment on the previous caller talking about bathroom remodeling. Steve suggested adding pocket doors to save on space. He did this in his home and loves it. Now, we have pocket doors in my house in a couple of places, and it worked out really well, as a matter of fact. So it's not a bad comment. Another thing to consider.
Absolutely. Two things I would just mention, because we often have this issue, is that when you put in a pocket door, you're not typically going to have room to accommodate electrical fixtures. So if there's a switch or an outlet in that cavity where the door needs to slide, it's going to be a slightly oversized partition. It might be worth building the wall out the extra 2 inches to accommodate the pocket door. The other thing is that if you have a situation where it's a bathroom and it's going to be high humidity, you know, doors like to, they're wood, and they like to bow or distort from humid conditions. And it's just one of those things where if you've got a humid room and you're putting a large slab of wood in a space, you want to be thinking, is this going to work out or is this going to cause problems? I mean, we do it all the time, but we want to think about that. It's just one of those things that can be an issue.
And Jan sent an email. She asked about adding to her onto her home. The contractor, she tells the contractor what she wants, but they're not really helping with designing phase. Who should Jan be looking for?
Oh, that is a tough one, because...
And you only have 30 seconds, you know, to answer.
Well, it's convenient to have the designing and the construction all under one roof, right? But typically you would go and find an architect that does residential work and would be willing to design the addition. You could talk about exactly what the contractor needs to build it, so you can kind of limit the drawings and really define the scope of work and control costs.
Yeah, that all makes good sense. Boy, this has been a great show. I thank you both very much for being with us today. I know our listeners appreciate it, and I certainly do as well. So I hope we can do this again, and we probably will.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks,
both. Thanks, Larry.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Christy Weber, Director of Design at TDS Custom Construction in Madison. And just by way of full disclosure, we should mention Chad's Design is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So great for that as well. And tomorrow, what do we got tomorrow? What's Garden Talk? My goodness, we'll talk about winter pruning and what salting can do to your garden. Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston join us. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. There's some interesting programming going on right through the afternoon. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.